Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. That debt is fraud. Much of what the federal government is doing it under the pretense of fraud. In other words, they don't have the authority. It is not constitutional. These are not my words. These are the framers' words. And as Thomas Jefferson said, ignorance of the law is no excuse. You got to understand, the Constitution is the supreme law. It's not some noble guide to governance. So, you're welcome to join the Loudoun Liberty Prayer Circle. That information is on the Reclaiming the Republic website on the Red State Talk Radio podcast page, or we invite you to start your own if you're so inclined. I just ask that we employ every tool possible, and I believe in spiritual tools, so please learn, pray, and act. Now, one new add-on as a repeater to the beginning of every show. Your campaign begins after every election. This means our campaign, where we're joining you, begins now. When we talk about joining you, we want to join you in you petitioning your public servants, because the best campaign, the best way you can actually win an election is by petitioning your public servant that's representing you at the county, state, or federal, by using First Amendment petitions for the redress of grievances. And as they gaff you, as they completely ignore you, or they actually come after you, then you are gaining an empirical pile of empirical data. An empirical pile, but it's actually a pile of empirical data. And so that way, you can actually present this to the people. Now, in a call last night, this comes up, and it came up in a call last night. It came up actually a couple times this week, and it's come up over the past year or two or what have you. This is a public relations campaign, and your job, I have to emphasize this, your job is to thoroughly communicate to the people what bums your public servants are. They already know that they're self-serving hacks, but the people need to know that their liberties are at risk. The things that they value are at risk based on their lack of being even interested, not even interested in supporting the Constitution. They're there to support themselves, and they're legally bound. This is one of the beautiful things about our form of government, especially this government. They are legally bound to support that Constitution. If they fail to do so, they're out. Now, on building on this concept, and you've heard me say this, and actually I place this in context to how Mohammedans, anybody that's of the Islamic faith or a Mohammedan, is somebody that cannot be a citizen. If they're a genuine Mohammedan, if they are genuine in their faith, then the fact that they're taking a pledge or an oath to become a citizen of the United States is an outright lie. And unfortunately, folks, lying is one of their doctrines in their faith. If you look up, and I forget if you want, it's actually in Petition 3 regarding the invasion, how they actually have a doctrine where it is okay to be deceitful and, you know, lie. It is, even though it's a sin to lie to another Mohammedan, it is okay to further the cause by lying and be deceitful. In other words, this is their tactic. This is why they go in, they migrate, they say, yeah, we're going to be good citizens, and they take over your government. Folks, go ask the Zoroastrians how well this worked out for them. If you don't know who the Zoroastrians are, they're the famous or former Persians, what we call Iranians today. See, the Iranians were not Islamic. They were Zoroastrians. That was the faith of Persia. And yet there's not one Zoroastrian left. Actually, what we're seeing today is a renaissance in the Persian culture in trying to get back to that original faith. In other words, after it's been wiped out for centuries and centuries, and unfortunately, due to the lack of really good documentation or anything else, and there's no doubt in my mind that as it became an Islamic state, they purged and probably destroyed and damaged everything they possibly could to let these people get back to their roots. In other words, it is about annihilating your faith and culture and dominating and taking over. So when we talk about a Mohammedan and they are a citizen, that is a lie. Because every citizen, I can't emphasize this amount at all. Let me correct myself. And I apologize if I seem a little jumbled in my head. Pretty stressful these days, but every citizen is obligated, morally and legally obligated, to support the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. What that means is that you have to be willing to take up arms to defend that Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. If you're not willing to do that, it's one thing to be a conscientious objector, but if you're not willing and you don't believe you are obligated to support the Constitution, you should surrender your citizenship. And as a matter of fact, folks, I've talked about this. We actually need to start jerking or removing people and their citizen status. They should not be able to vote. People are literally using their votes to directly engage and run a campaign, or actually, it's an insurgency against the Constitution. What Democrats and communists in America are doing in voting for unconstitutional government and unconstitutional government actions, this is even happening in the Republican ranks. I can't emphasize this enough. When you place full context to the demand on every citizen to support that Constitution, and then people go, no, we have a freedom of thought. You absolutely do have a freedom of thought and ideas. But if those ideas and thoughts are actually counter to and actually are considered a insurgency against or fighting against the Constitution or supporting unconstitutional government, then that's treasonous, and you should not be allowed to vote or be a citizen. And as a matter of fact, I believe if we actually understood the spirit of this concept, see, the framers, when they went down this path, they didn't realize how the Constitution and how these states, as they ratified it and became a part of this union, they didn't know how quickly this would congeal into this is so divine. I mean, it became the process of actually getting rid of anything that doesn't belong. It's a self-cleaning government system if we actually apply the principles of this system. It's not just a principle, it is a foundation of the system. We're not to be supporting parties. We're not to be supporting people. As a matter of fact, when you really think about it, and you understand Christianity, or at least you understand Judeo-Christian principles, where we're not to have any other gods, you know, before us, right? That our creator is our only God. And so, excuse me, understanding this principle, understanding this concept of obligation to support that Constitution, it is tantamount to the obligation of every human being to support our Creator. Now, we can rebel against our Creator, yeah, but there are consequences of that. There are consequences. If you fail to support the Constitution, we should be removing citizens. It's not about just thought. It's okay to get out and actually say, I support these ideas, trying to move these ideas forward. But when you start taking action on those ideas, and instead of supporting the current form of government, and because, see, there's a process. There's a process within our government of changing it. But when you ask the politicians to stand aside from that process, to remove themselves from the government process itself, and assume things and powers, roles, responsibilities, this is very much like the Organic Act and the intentions that they did behind that when they actually created this whole facade of corruption and fraud. So get this, folks. Get this into your head that we need to start holding everybody accountable. And we need to start telling people, how is it? Make them think about this question. How is it that you're worthy of being a citizen if you're actually attacking and going against the Constitution? So, it is one thing to be able to have your own ideas and to feel a certain way. But when you take your ideas into action and you start supporting, so this is one of the reasons why secret ballots came to be. Back in the old days, you did not have a right of secrecy. You basically voted, you cast your vote the way the votes were taken. Whether that was by oral, how do you vote for this? Vote, they go and it's right there out in the open. The way the sheriff did it, they didn't have these little boxes of shrouds of secrecy that nobody knew that you were actually running an insurgency against the Constitution by voting for these evil people that hoodwinked, the voters to say, yeah, I'm a good guy, but we actually did really bad and evil things, and we actually were compromising and working against the Constitution. Because that's what's been happening. And they had to take it to this level of secrecy. If you support secret ballots and secrecy of voting, then you actually support the continued insurgency, because it shouldn't matter what your public servants do. They are bound to only do those things within the Constitution. But if you really want them to be able to do things that they can't do, those things that they have no power to do, assuming new powers, then how is that legitimate? Or let me just rephrase that. How are you a legitimate citizen of this union? You're not. And so you think you have a right. No, you have a right to be an inhabitant here, but you don't have a right to be protected by that Constitution, that very same thing you're attacking. There you go. And so, folks, you have to understand what these people are doing. These people, and some people don't even know that they're doing this because they're so enshrouded in the party and supporting the party or supporting their person, supporting the idea. And so this kind of just sets the stage because it's Friday, and I'll give you some feedback today. But we're also going to dive into, as always, our little dig, or actually, it's not a dig. Well, today there'll be a little bit of a dig on what's happening currently. But I need to present to you what a constitutional president would do. And fortunately, I've already provided to you some of those ideas, but before I go there, let me just talk about a couple of things. First off, when we look at ordering for Christmas, actually I've been sponsoring, and the reason I'm helping Timber Nation is because they're good patriots. Their hearts are in the right spot. They're a company that I would really recommend you support, because these are good people. They'll give you the shirt off their back. They're that type of people, and they build a good product. And their product is a quality product. If you like solid wood furniture, then there you go. And so one of the things I was going to tell you is I did get a notice from them that they've got more orders than they can fulfill now moving forward. So if you're going to get an order with them, set your expectations that it will not make it to you by Christmas. And so all that being said, I will probably not be promoting Timber Nation, but what I'm going to do is I will actually work towards a sponsorship program. Now, I was talking to the person that usually likes you. If they could, they'd click a little button that, you know, give me a zap. And if everybody that I deal with and work with could do that, they'd give me a zap when they felt that I was doing something that they wish I wouldn't do, or wish I wouldn't say, or wish I would be more one way or the other. And I mentioned this the other day, that Christians, really good Christians, want me to be, you know, more firm and more hard on, and I, you know, I don't want to be politically correct, and I try not to be politically correct. But I do know that there are people today that are way too sensitive about, we'll call them trigger words. You know, you just mentioned something, you know, and all of a sudden they get really upset. And, you know, not to be insinuating or inflammatory, I'm only using this one phrase or what have you to kind of show you that we've allowed ourselves to be owned by paradigms or by phrases that create paradigms. Now, any guy will tell you that the last thing you should ever say to your wife is calm down, or you're being emotional, right? Those are trigger words. And so I understand that, you know, there are so many trigger words. There are so many things we can't say that it is stifling to thought and speech. For free speech and free thought to exist, we actually have to allow people to say what they say and not be offended. I mean, seriously, there are words that some races can't say, or some, you know, sexes or genders can't say. I mean, seriously, folks, this is America where we all have a right to be offended and to offend others. And all of a sudden, it has become illegal to use insensitive words. I mean, literally, they are. If the cancel crowd will go after you because you're using a special word that, oh, you can't say that anymore. What? Did I miss something? Did we actually hit the point where we no longer honor the freedom of speech in America? Are we really at that point where we can't actually acknowledge that the ideas should flow freely and the words should flow freely? If it offends you, then that's fine. But when you get offended, I mean, it's, again, this goes back to the ideology where we're talking about, let's just say, Democrats and communism. You can actually get out there and say, you know, I believe, you know, the Marxist, you know, all labor is equal and so forth. Okay, you believe that. That's one thing. But if all of a sudden you go down this path of going out there and demanding and voting for people that are going to ignore their constitutional duties and actually do things that are not constitutional, assume powers and so forth, and you support that, you vote for that, you speak for that, and you get out and actually take action against that. You actually start shutting down, because when we look, it's one thing to protest. So, folks, we have a right of commerce. In America, that is an inalienable right. It is one of those unmentionable things nobody can even fathom, that somebody could come in and take away your right to provide for yourself, regardless of how insensitive you what you're doing or what have you. In other words, in the old days, there were people that, you know, would have racist policies in their restaurants or what have you, and people went in and actually denied them and broke the law by shutting them down by having sit-ins or sitting in, you know, in other ways and other things. This was a big part of the civil rights era. Now, that's actually illegal to take away a person's ability to do that, but that was called civil disobedience. Now, the jurists basically said, well, you know, everybody has this right, but we're not going to really punish people. Now, I honestly believe that civil disobedience should actually start speaking publicly, but people should actually be held accountable to the law, period. But we need to start setting those precedences so people start understanding that this is just wrong. It's wrong on so many levels. But we cannot ignore the law. When we ignore the law, then we are actually setting ourselves up for no longer having the law. And the law becomes whimsical based on the discretions of those who govern us. So, folks, we have to start really allowing yourself. I have to allow myself to be inflamed, get angry, and have to keep very cognizant of this idea that when I get angry, I may say or do something stupid. But when we do those things, you can't expect to hold people. I mean, if you kill somebody, you strike somebody, then that's fine. You got to be held accountable to the law. That's against the law. But words, you know, we grew up a long, long time ago. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me. So regardless of what words trigger you, and your words trigger them, we need to stop. So this whole thing I started on was basically trying to help people start understanding that what we're trying to do, because I started on this on sponsorship. What I want to do, because I was asked, and people go, oh, you stop doing the sponsorships. Why aren't you doing that? Because it is my goal to actually create a league of sponsored companies that aren't supporting me, but they're committed to supporting candidates that will sign our pledge specifically, that they will step down if they violate their oath by failing to support the Constitution in any way. We need our public servants to be held to that, because that is the supreme law of the land. And we want businesses to actually get that and understand that if we actually have people, our members of our legislative body and our government, our public servants, if they actually sign these pledges, because they're actually taking an oath, it's the same thing, it's a legal oath. But signing these pledges so that they were legally stepped down, we need to create this legal document, because apparently the oath in itself isn't enough. And so we want these corporations, businesses, what have you, we want you to start supporting employees, or I should say not employees, government employees or public servants, your elected officials, in demanding that they step down if they fail to support. There's no latitude. You can only do those things enumerated. If there's a bill that comes in front of you, and it's a standard bill that they've been signing and basically supporting, like the infrastructure bill in Congress, they've been doing it for years, but it's still unconstitutional. And you sign and vote for that, because, not just because they've been doing it, but you didn't even know, then you are violating your oath, because that is something that's not enumerated. And you're funding and supporting unconstitutional government. Do you understand this now? This goes right back to, we are all supposed to support the Constitution. So when you understand why it's ultra important for we the people to do this, we have to oppose every infraction. It doesn't matter if that infraction benefits you. It's an infraction. And when we take this paradigm, when we demand that the Constitution be complied to, now we've started the campaign. Now we've actually set the standard that if you're not going to support the Constitution, you're gone. This is the only way we can create the self-cleaning system that we receive. Now I'm going to be going into break, so when we come back, I'll dive into that Trump policy what a constitutional Trump presidency would do, and some zingers or some criticism on, you know, what Trump has done already in his appointments and so forth. But we will be right back after this promo on Republic Review. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so I hope your takeaway on this background on sponsorships, you know, when I actually start promoting again, the background on that is that if I'm promoting somebody, then we will have a standing agreement that they will provide some financial support to some candidates, not all candidates or what have you, but we want them to actually, when we get somebody to sign off on a pledge and we can put that pledge on the endorsement page, we actually had a few more than I put up there. The problem was that when people got it, they signed it, but they didn't send it back to me, or they didn't actually go and get their sheriff or somebody else to sign it. Now, we want you to understand that we're actually getting somebody, a county clerk or somebody in your county government needs to sign this pledge that's you signing it, like a notary. Now, we believe that you can go pay for a notary, but you can also go get a person that is actually in office and sign the pledge. You sign the pledge, and then they will sign the pledge that they witnessed you signing this pledge. Therefore, we now have a witness that's saying you signed on to this obligation that you must support the Constitution. Now, remember, Section 1 of the 14th Amendment says no person shall, or no state shall enforce, make or enforce any law that abridges the privileges and immunities of a U.S. citizen. Every citizen is obligated to support the Constitution. If you fail to, and you're in office, and you are a public servant under the oath of, then therefore you must be removed. So now we actually have, a witness, just like your regular oath, but this is something very specific, because the oath to support, you could start to reinterpret. And bottom line, this pledge holds you very specifically to those enumerated objects within the Constitution. If you support anything that is not within those enumerated objects, then you are not supporting the Constitution and will step down. Anyway, so we want to actually focus on this, because if we can get businesses to actually get involved in supporting the Constitution, then they're no longer supporting the parties. Folks, you understand the magnitude of this? Now it's not against conservatives, controlling and creating a theocracy, or, progressives creating an ungodless, the type of government we've got today. We now, which is an antichrist government, we now actually restore the freedom of commerce. In other words, a free market system and a free religious system, where government does not encumber us in those things. Other than local government can encumber us over decencies and other. I believe it will still be illegal that a person or a religious faith cannot actually perform human sacrifices. You know what I'm saying? Those things are more than legitimate laws. Decency laws have a place in an enlightened society. That's what helps us discipline ourselves to become more enlightened. Anyway, let me get into this Trump campaign. And actually, what I like to do is I kind of start off with what I've already covered. I've already covered on the 15th of November, invasion. The 18th of November, the currency. It must be gold and silver, precious metal, that is our currency that we hold in our hands, that we basically can transmute or basically transfer a pile of paper money into gold and silver. It must be commutable. Removal of all UN agreements, get ourselves out of these treaties and so forth. And that was on the 22nd. On the 25th, an immediate appeal. So President Trump needs to start making immediate appeals to the state legislatures to get them to do their job. And obviously, no, everybody goes, what the heck does that mean? If you haven't been listening to our content on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, what that means is that the state legislator, it is their job and obligation to hold the federal government accountable to their compact. They're the perpetual entity that has the responsibility of doing this. Just like the counties are the perpetual entities that are supposed to be holding the state accountable to that compact. It's not the people themselves. It is the perpetual entities that we've created as our governments. Anyway, and we go through this all the time. On the 29th, we covered the locking down of the Department of Justice and getting rid of and shutting out all of the types of lawsuits and their pursuit of attacking or going after states, people, and what have you, that it's not within their enumerations, things that they don't have the power to do, and to actually get the Department of Justice fine-tuned in going after public servants who are failing to support their oath, removing judges, Congress. Yeah, that's right. What that means is we will start removing everybody. And as we start removing the bad people, I believe we can start giving some first and finals, because I believe that's another part of this process. We need to give people that maybe didn't know, they didn't understand, they just did what they were told, or this is how they've been doing it. That's what they told me. They've been doing it this way for years. And okay, so who am I to question that? Those types of people that actually seem to have, you know, a position of innocence. Not a presumption, but a position. In other words, they actually asked and they were told, this is how we do it. Oh, really? This doesn't seem right, but okay. But those people that says, do it because this is how we want it done. Those people go. So we actually have to have a good, strong litmus test so that we don't necessarily have to purge out everybody. Those who are apprehensive in doing something that they shouldn't have been doing, that they didn't know it was wrong, they were told it was right. But those who knew what they were doing, like Nancy Pelosi, Schumer, McConnell, all of these people should be banned. And we're not talking about sending them to jail. We're only talking about removing them. We will leave it to the people where they come from, the good state, the good county, the legislative district, whatever. You can hold your trial and get your pound of flesh from them later. As soon as we get rid of them, then that's up to you to file criminal charges. Now, if there is treason, those types of things, then that's something that the Department of Justice can't pursue. So as they lay down or levy these charges, they can actually say, yeah, you know what, this is treason. So anyway, that was the 29th. The 2nd of December was the retraction, or I should say the destaffing and the shutting down of many of all of the offices that are within the states that belong to the Department of Interior. All of those presence, they have no business. Those are not needful buildings. Those are not needful offices. They're not enumerated. Those things should not exist. And the people staffing those are not enumerated roles. So therefore, even though they may have created the law, it's one thing to create the law and ask the states to abide by that law. But when it actually comes to the federal government trying to take state resources, state property, and so forth, no state is obligated to cut their arm off. No state is obligated to surrender its sovereignty. And so it's one thing for them to try to create a law, and, you know, we kind of just not ignore the law or nullify the law, but when it comes to, we're telling you that you've got to cut your arm if you've got to give us this land, sorry, you can't do that. And because it is not a, that is not something that is being imposed upon the union. That is something that is being imposed upon you directly. It's not the enforcement of a law. It's about taking your resources. It's about regulating you, because if all of a sudden they say you can't do fracking, does that mean every state in the union is being affected by the fracking law? No, it's not. What that is it's targeting very specific states that are capable of fracking. That is actually locking down their resources, and the federal government can't do that. They can't go into a state and do that. And it is not a uniform law that applies to the union. It is specific warfare tactics that is directly levied upon a individual state or a group of states. And so they've been getting away with this for a long time. And no state is obligated to allow the federal government to take their stuff away from them. Even if they create a law, if the law is a part, is attached to the entire union, but it's not. How many East Coast states have forests and woods locked down compared to the West Coast or the Central and so forth? Anyway, we can dive into this down the road. But the sixth, we covered state sovereignty and the ability to sell land and any form of resource or foreign entity. Wow, well, that's today. Well, so let's cover that, because that's what we're covering today. Bottom line, there's a real problem. We know for a fact that foreigners are coming in and buying land. Now, I'm not talking about foreigner U.S. citizens, because if you don't live in that state and you come in like Bill Gates and buy land, that's a different story. We can get into that later. But bottom line, the federal jurisdiction over land within states is this, to this specific enumeration, that they have the ability. It's enumerated that they can possess forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings, and that's it. For those enumerated roles and responsibilities, they can possess those enumerated buildings. Does that make sense? In other words, at a port of entry, they have the need for a building for their customs and inspections and so forth to be able to perform those duties, like at the airport. Or at actually a physical harbor port, because these are ports of entry, or on our borders, you know, immigration to a port of entry, so that anybody that is not a citizen coming into the United States must identify themselves. That is the process. Running across the border is an invasion. That is not a process that is recognized as legal and or legitimate. And even to this day, they still have not done that. What they're trying to do is they're trying to violate the laws, and they're actually, and this is all political. This is all trying to undermine so that voter blocks vote a certain way or against a certain way. And folks, I'm telling you that they don't have the ability to do those things. And so every public servant is responsible, accountable, legally bound to support the Constitution and laws in pursuance to the Constitution. If they don't know what is in pursuant to the Constitution, then they're ignorant and they should be removed, because bottom line, you cannot falsely swear or basically say you will support the Constitution when you don't know, and you come off and say, I don't know, then you have failed to fulfill your oath and you've actually falsely swore. So anyway, and there's laws against this, folks. But when we talk about very specifically the land that the federal government has, this is state land that they buy from them. 9 times out of 10, it's leases. So when they get these, the federal jurisdiction over these forts, magazines, arsenals, docks, and needful buildings, there's dockyards, then these are buildings that they use for a very specific reason. They're not allowed to sell those, or it would be enumerated that they would have the authority to transfer or sell land to foreign entities. Their job is to protect the sovereignty of the states, which is why they are limited to these specific roles and responsibilities and properties. when we talk about territories, territories belong to the union. In other words, when they go out and buy the territory, where does that money come from? That is not federal money. That's union money. That is the money and property and the value. Remember, folks, our government is not to be holding and investing and capable of doing anything in investment space or investment space at all. The purchasing of a the purchasing of a territory is within their bounds via a treaty under the guises of expanding and allowing the union to move forward. Now, technically, any sovereign state can petition to become a state in the union. This is why the sovereign states of the South after the Civil War were required to petition to become a state. Because you just can't do-si-do back into the union when you seceded. You divorced yourself. You had to remarry to get back in. If you understand that point, because the South and many progressives have argued differently. I am here to tell you, you leave, that's divorcing, you've got to get remarried. There is a process, and the process is constitutional, that Congress shall admit new states into the Union. In other words, they have the authority of ensuring that the state that is joining will meet the needs and requirements of the union. And for the most part, Congress did a pretty decent job in at least doing that. But they started stepping and taking liberties by 1819 when Indiana came into the union. So as looking at territories, they can't just take territory like Puerto Rico and sell that to China. They can't do that. That territory belongs to the union as well as those people there with their own intent. In other words, let's look at it this way. Every body of people and their governing body, in other words, your counties within a territory, you have a right of self-determination and destination. In the union, you are constrained to a republican form of government, so there are constraints within how you are going to govern. If you want to govern outside of that republican form of government constraint, then you need to pack up your bags and go somewhere else that will allow you to have the statist government you want. That's it. In the union, every state is guaranteed a republican form of government, which means all governments within that state will be republican in form. You can't create a new state of government within a republican form of government state that's required to be republican in form. So as we start looking at territories, then we have to understand and recognize that those territories are not federal properties ownership. They don't have a deed. They have a stewardship of keeping that on track, that territory on track to becoming a state, to transition it. Therefore, they don't have, and now that technically they can, you know, work with the people of the union, i.e. the states. And you got to remember that when Congress does something, they're basically are, they should be representing the interests of the states. Now, if let's just say, because we've got this wacko communist Senate and House of Representatives today with Republicans and Democrats, regardless of who, they're communists because they're not actually doing the bidding of the people because they're not really representing them, and nor are they really representing the state. So let's just say a territory of the United States actually, they say, you know what, we're going to give this territory to China. We're just going to give it to them. If they don't have the consent of the union, and if they don't have the consent of the people within that, in other words, advising them that, hey, you're going to become Chinese communists now. Just imagine them trying to do this. The states would actually step in and stop that. The states have the power and authority to do that. How would they do that? They would basically, and this is what the states don't understand, is basically they could step right in, because that would actually be a Senate treaty. That wouldn't really be a part of the House. But they could actually step in and say, you will vote against that. and you will give us that suffrage. Or if you do, if you deny us our suffrage, you'll be violating your oath. That vote won't be, it won't be recognized as valid, and we will replace you because Article 5 of the Constitution guarantees us our suffrage in the Senate. Understanding the Constitution is so critical because so many people are so illiterate on it, they really think that, these scoundrels can get away with doing what they're doing. So bottom line, there's no mechanism within the federal Constitution giving the federal government the authority or power to defy their responsibility of protecting state sovereignty. It's not there. More so, within this Constitution, no state can actually go into an agreement or compact with another state or with a foreign power, nor can they make a state within a state. In other words, if they create a state, there's going to be a new state in that state, it has to be basically admitted into the Union. That's why the Article 4, Section 3 delineates new states coming into the Union. You cannot create a state in your state that's not a part of the Union. In other words, you're creating a foreign entity. And in other words, you're going to actually go into an agreement in creating a foreign entity, which you're constrained from doing. You see my point? There's no way that the states can even allow a transfer of sale. When you look at a transfer of property or resource, a business, which includes their property, it includes the people and so forth, their intellectual property, their hardware, things that can be picked up and moved, like all of their cars, buildings, aircraft, what have you. There's no way a U.S. resource that is owned and controlled by U.S. people, corporations, states, governments, what have you, can it be transferred to a foreign entity without the proper process. In other words, it's one thing for an airplane to be sold to a foreign entity via trade and those types of things. But selling the land is a different thing. It cannot be transferred. It cannot. Because technically, that property, let's say this big, huge Hilton property that takes up an entire city block, becomes a state within a state. Because now it's under foreign ownership and foreign control. You understand, folks, this cannot be done. It is the Constitution does not allow it. The only things that it allows is the states to determine themselves, to determine their law, their legal system, those type, their self-destiny, but they cannot be turncoats. They cannot sell out America. You just imagine if Britain, started working with Congress shortly after the Revolution, let's say 1820s, they come in and say, hey, we want to buy up some of your land. There's no way. That would have been treasonous. And there's just no way they would have even allowed that. But actually, they started allowing that under the guises of corporations, with the foreign investments into railroads and so forth. What we really, there's some interesting things, and I don't want to get into it because I'm already really way late, and I've actually used the whole show covering this stuff. But bottom line, when we look at foreign land and foreign ownership in America, it cannot be owned by a foreign entity. The Constitution does not allow it. Therefore, any law created at the state or federal level is unconstitutional and not in pursuance to the Constitution. It can't even be implied. Ergo, what we're looking at regarding, what's happening in all the states, a constitutional president will actually step in and say, you know what? It's nice to see that these evildoers were, within the states, within the federal government, whoever was involved, those people will be held criminally liable. They'll also be removed first, and then they'll be held criminally liable because that's treasonous of what they did. And then that land and that foreign nation that owns that will be notified, hey, you can't own that land, whoever did that. You know, we're going to send them to you so that you can get your pound of flesh out of them once we have basically, you know, taken everything from them and, you know, gotten our pound of justice as well. When we're done with them, you can have them. But we believe you knew that what they were doing as an agent for you was unconstitutional. You had to have known, because anybody that understands our Constitution, and if you're illiterate and you thought you were good, sorry, you're not. The contract and the Constitution, the compact itself, supersedes anything that you've tried to create or what they've tried to do. So, by the way, I didn't get a chance to mention this. I'm sorry, I should have led this with, so I'll lead with this on Monday, just so everybody that's still listening understands that we had some challenges broadcasting this week. I think it was Tuesday and the beginning of Wednesday. And so we had some denials of service. Now, I did get feedback, and I actually had quite a few people say, hey, what happened? What happened? And, you know, this happens, but this was not an external problem. We had some internal process problems that was denying my connection on Tuesday, and it began again on Wednesday. Thursday, yesterday, no problem. But just to let you know that sometimes that happens, but usually when it does happen, it happens from external, you know, denials of service. And if you understand that tech term or whatever, denial of service, it is usually done in a nefarious way. But it wasn't necessarily nefarious this last time. It was an oops type of thing. So anyway, I just want to let you know that we haven't been bumped yet. I haven't died. I'm okay. And I appreciate the concerns. I really do. Those of you who do call, and as a matter of fact, I want to specify, there's a lady that calls, and she's called before, and she's left messages. Your phone number comes up anonymous, so I can't call you back with the caller ID. And I would appreciate it, because I actually wanted to get back in touch with you. I've wanted to talk to you for a while because you've always given me questions and ideas and so forth. And if you don't give me a way to interface with you, then I can't, you know, actually help explain, you know, what I can do, what I can't do. You know, let's talk about that. That's a good idea. Anyway, let's, you know, when you do leave a message, make it possible, because I actually do interface with everybody. If you contact me on Facebook, I'll get back to you. It may take a while because I run on auto interrupt. That's another tech term. Auto interrupt is, you know, whatever's interrupting you actually becomes precedent. So anyway, we're here to help, and we're not from the government, and I do everything I possibly can to ensure that we try to assist you in any way we possibly can, because like I said, we're here to help and we're not from the government. Now, with that, I apologize for not being able to cover all of the other stuff, some feedback of what's going on, like Bitcoin and the currencies and so forth, but we'll bring this up on Monday. As you know, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.